This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Nice to see you all here today. And in particular, hello to everybody up in Leeds in West Yorkshire. I hope all of your yellow school buses arrive safe and sound from your wonderful network up there this morning. I don't think I've ever been described as a dead parrot before, but I suppose there are those who would think I'd become a bit like a parrot talking about yellow school buses constantly. But I'm certainly not nailed to my perch either. I wish I was sometimes. I seem to be flying around all over the place even more now than I was before, with so much going on in our industry at the moment. What I wanted to talk to you a bit about this morning was a little project that's been going on relatively behind the scenes with a snappy title. We've been talking to the DfT to try and do something about that, but the future of transport for children and young people is what we're trying to achieve and look at how we can move things forward. The group was quietly put together in the dying days of 2009, so I guess it was where the Yellow School Bus Commission was coming to the end of its formal work, although, as you've heard David say, we haven't gone away. We are still there in the background, and we're still carrying the mantle, so to speak. But we've now decided, a number of us and some of those people that I met during that commission's work have started to take a look at one or two other issues for young people. And in fact, in many cases, they're looking at the scheduled networks, the existing resource that we have, and how best to allow young people to understand how to make use of that network. You're all very familiar, I'm sure, with the idea that those young people that are aware of the services and understand how to use them and find them user-friendly are much more likely to go on and use them rather than buy cars and other forms of motorised transport as they get to driver licence age. So we're looking to try and open up or reduce some of the barriers that they may have in that respect there. The work was coordinated by the DfT's Equalities Policy Branch, which has been an interesting experience for me, having worked with pure transport professionals before. It came that they come from a slightly different angle, and so actually it's proven a bit of a breath of fresh air in many ways, because I've been able to stand back a little bit and stop looking at things from my transport perch, so to speak, and hear a few of the comments, particularly from the young people themselves, about why it is so difficult and what they can't understand about a network that they consider to be extremely complicated. As all these groups, we try and put down a fairly snatty title to what we're trying to achieve, and that's really that comes from one of our earlier documents. It's aiming to lift the barriers to travel faced by children and young people to the benefit of children and young people and the community as a whole, and you'll see where that comes from in a moment, because particularly in these times of dying networks, we're trying to look at all the options and alternatives that might exist there. There are a number of groups involved there, and as you heard David saying earlier on, we tried very much to involve some of the youngsters themselves that use those services. Certainly when I was working with the Yellow School Bus Commission, one of the most enjoyable parts of that was actually meeting not only the children at the schools and the students that we went around, but also, for example, the UK Youth Parliament. You'll see there that they are very definitely one of the groups involved here. The National Children's Bureau, for example, have been a fascinating organisation to work with, and they've really been pushing very hard to move this forward. And a number of the young people that I've met are incredibly enthusiastic about this project. They really are very keen to try and do something about this, and they've seen an opportunity at last to engage with some of these transport professionals that they've heard about so much and can't understand why we do some of the strange things we do. Very important in there as well is the Community Transport Association. Some of you will know that in my daytime job with the Federation of Passenger Transport, the O-licence sector isn't always at one with the third sector, as I prefer to call it, the CTAs around the country. But I am a trustee of a Community Transport Association myself in my home territory in North Devon, and I believe very strongly that there is a role to play. It's just that sometimes the playing field, we think, needs levelling out. But by talking to the CTA within this group, it's been extremely useful to discover one or two of the things that they may or may not be able to do to help us along the way. And actually, with some of the announcements that have been made around the country recently, the CTA are going to have a huge role to play. There are going to be a large number of areas, as David says, that won't have a traditional bus in the sense that we all know it, and we've got to start thinking about the Section 19, Section 22 fraternity as the real bus that is going to become the bus in a number of these locations. So I hope a good mix of groupings there that have been helping us out as we've been going along the way. Now, we've seen Norman earlier on, and one of the issues that we had, this project, as I say, started to crystallise at the end of 2009, and obviously we were all fairly well aware that it was very likely there would be a general election in 2010, and so there were a number of issues that worried us at first as to whether we would be able to continue with the work or whether it would come to a grinding halt. And one of the significant changes, of course, was the change from the DCSF into the department, or morphing back into the Department for Education. But I'm very pleased to say, and again, he's done it here this morning, he's confirmed that these things are not off the agenda. Norman, very soon after he took his post on, wanted to hear from us and understand some of the research work that we had either done or were getting involved in. And so I can say that the current government are taking this forward and are taking it very seriously. So that's good news from our point of view. We were very pleased to see that. Now, I said earlier on that the young people that we've met involved in the project, whether it's from the UK Youth Parliament or from the NCB or other groups involved, are incredibly enthusiastic about this. They really want to get up and go and get involved in it. Now, one of the reasons I've found this really, really, really quite nice is because I'm up to my eyes in all sorts of things at the moment, as you guys are here. Resources are dying all around us, and I don't know, you seem to find about 14 things to do in the place of one every day now, and it really is becoming a challenge. But there are a huge number of young people out there who really want to help and really want to get on. The slight problem we did have initially is that, unfortunately, we are professionals working during the day in the main, whereas their free time is quite often in the evenings or at weekends. But they can get on with an awful lot of work. They've been doing a lot of data processing for us. They've been going out there and finding out information when we've explained to them a little bit about how the networks run, how they operate. In my case, I've been trying to explain to them some of the background to the operators and why they do what they do. And these young people have really been very keen to do that. They've got themselves into groups around the country. We've got more coming on stream already. And I'd encourage you very much to take a look at those resources in your local area and start to use them. It doesn't cost you anything in the main. We've had to pay the odd travelling expense to get them one or two places that we wanted them to be. But other than that, they're actually doing most of this for nothing and they're just powering on with it. So really good stuff. And I'd really encourage you to go and get using them because there are some surprises out there when you look. The first thing that we did, though, was to bring a whole pile of people together last July. We held a big stakeholder seminar made up of the representatives from these groups and others around. We brought them all together here in central London, and we spent a day hammering out various ideas, hearing what a number of the groups had on offer, and in particular, what they wanted to see, what they wanted from us. They wanted to understand why life was so complicated. Why were fares not on a parallel wherever you went? Why were there differences in the discounts available and the concessions available? Why did the networks in some places have a heap of information, whether it was electronic online or whether it was paperwork information or roadside information? And in other areas, there was absolutely nothing at all. They couldn't understand these things, they wanted to know. And in many cases, we go through our daily lives not thinking about some of these things. And I have to say, one of the things that became very obvious to me was that we think very much about adults. We think very much about, and when I say we, I'm not talking about you. I know many of you are professionals in the schools and youth sector. But in terms of the transport sector, certainly many of my members and operators forget the young people. They're more interested in the adult market, and they'll provide information for the adult market, but actually finding information for the youngsters is something that wasn't out there, and that was a very great disappointment. Another stream of work that's been going on as well, and I've heard some comments this morning about training, and our friends from Manchester indicating, for example, that they are undertaking training programmes for young people to induct them into the transport scene, is that we've had what we're calling mobile youth resources in a number of parts of the country, and we want to see more. And I've been trying to do my bit in facilitating links between some of these groups and the operators who have vehicles for disposal, for example, that may otherwise do nothing. These vehicles can be turned into extremely useful mobile resources to be taken out there to the young people. In many cases, the operators have been doing that themselves as an initiative based on this. And here's one in my neck of the woods down in the West Country in Plymouth, Dennis Dart, as he's called, who travels around schools. There's publicity, web-based material, little booklets and pamphlets to train youngsters about that network, what it does, how it works, how to use it, how to ask for their fare if they're paying a fare, what they can and can't do on the service, all sorts of things which are incredibly useful. But it goes a bit beyond that because there are many other life skills issues that you can actually deal with on a mobile classroom in many cases, and these vehicles we're looking to see do a lot more as they travel around the country. And I'd certainly like to talk to many of you if you're interested in getting involved in similar projects if you haven't already done so in your neck of the woods. So the mobile youth resources are part of this programme as well. Now, I said earlier on that that there are a number of streams of information that we're trying to simplify, and we're trying to understand why they are in some cases complex, or indeed in some cases why they're so simple. Why can some areas do things that are so simple and easy to understand across the board, issues that have been resolved, whereas other areas find it so incredibly difficult. So concessionary fare provision isn't just about elderly folk, it can be just as much about young people as well, the sort of discounts that we could give to encourage them to use the services for the future. Post 16, I think we have touched on that briefly here this morning, post 16 transport provision is something that's very much in our minds at the moment. And again, you know, one can ask the question, why should people who are over 16 still in full-time education suddenly find themselves paying that much more than the youngsters? You know, they're all challenged with their disposable income. They ought to also perhaps be considered as well. That's a discussion that we've been having. And again, nice to hear Paul talking about the cycling issues. That's something that's been a pet love of mine as well. I talk to my colleagues in the industry all the time about trying to find ways in which buses and coaches and cycles can link up, particularly in the rural areas where, in my neck of the woods, for example, we may well lose some of the fiddly parts of our rural network, and it may be core mainline services that remain. So if we can get them to those stops and find ways of integrating them onto that transport provision, so much the better. And in so many cases, my colleagues in my side of the industry groan when the word cycle is issued. The mere thought of trying to find a way of getting a cycle onto a vehicle or at the side of the road and all the health and safety issues that go with that allegedly is a supposed minefield. But the reality is it doesn't have to be. Training provision, though, is perhaps one of my biggest areas of interest, and that I believe that it's important that the youngsters have people who can talk to them, who can discuss with them about the difficulties they have, show them that the network is really very easy to use. I always think back to, I've said this before at other conferences, I was a good Boy Scout for many years in my younger days, and we used to have to earn ourselves badges to do various things. Amongst them were going out and learning how to use a telephone box and also to go and use a bus service. And I can remember when I was a little Cub Scout boarding a bus in some strange rural area and having to ask the driver for my fare to go from one place to another and being really terrified of this great big bus and wondering where it went. I'd never been on this bus before. We were sent to completely unusual places. That was how you earned your badge. And now it's not just that the youngsters themselves that are often completely unaware of what it's like to travel on a bus. We heard Norman mentioning this dreadful situation that he had recently where somebody half a mile down the road was being taken by car and parked on the zigzag lines. You know, there are so many people that are just unaware of buses, their parents, their guardians, who don't use the public transport, then it doesn't even enter into their mind that they should encourage their youngsters to go and use that transport system. Why? Why on earth should it be like that? It really is such an easy system to use if you understand its intricacies. So that training provision, that induction, that awareness is incredibly important. You know, I know friends from Resolution are going to be talking to you later on. Things like the timetable, you know, the dreaded 24-hour clock. We've been going on about this for years, haven't we? We've had discussions about, do we use 12-hour, do we use 24-hour? Well, OK, we'll have those discussions, I guess, for a long, long time. But if you don't explain to people, if we're going to stick with 24-hour clock in some places and you don't explain to them how it works, and it's all very well having a little guide with it written down, but you've got to talk to these youngsters, you've got to hear what they say, you've got to understand why they're finding it difficult, and then they will begin to understand the network and begin to use that. So training provision, I think, is incredibly important. I briefly mentioned earlier on about the fact that there are so many different arrangements across the country, different bands in which people are classed as children, in which those discounts apply. You know, why? Why do we have so many different bands? We know in many cases it's a historic provision, but it certainly shouldn't be that way. We think it should be a lot simpler, a lot easier to understand. And indeed, the different types of scheme as well. You'll see there are some flat fare schemes in areas, others that are discounted schemes. Ian, in his territory, for example, has a discount card. Kent have something similar. There are others around the country as well. And smart cars, of course. Smart technology is something that is beginning to pick up. We're in the West Country, once again, grasping that nettle. I'm pleased to see we've got some money down there to get involved in that. And that's reinvigorating the possibilities of something I was involved in Devon. And our friends from Devon are here today, I know, which worked very well, involving not just the youth travel, but also other members of the community as well that could take advantage of those services. So very important issues for us to take on board. Now, the other one that was mentioned this morning was this issue of time, and that one drives me insane as an operator with bidding for contracts and thinking, crikey, I could have given my local authority a much better and more efficient price for this band of contracts if only the schools would move by sometimes as little as 5 or 10 minutes. We could get a vehicle from one to the other. You know, I'm teaching my grandmother to suck eggs talking to you guys here, and I guess up in Yorkshire, our friends there today will know all about this. I know all about the issues where the MyBus project tried to roll out beyond the secondary school side and tried to involve primary schools as well, to a degree of success, but then they got to a point where it became very difficult. We really do have to find ways of levering that to move forward, because it's the only way we're going to reduce costs significantly in transport provision in some of these locations. So both the times of use, the type of use as well, because it isn't just about going to and from school. There are other things that youngsters use in their transport provision, and that is as much about going to sporting activities, for example, going off to the shops to buy things, going out in the evenings. All of those provisions are part of what they do and what we should be including on the scene. Links to other services as well are important. A number of these schemes across the country, particularly where smart cars have been involved, have certainly looked at those cars being part of library cars. You can see there shop discounts are quite attractive in many areas. In the North Devon scheme, we offered a number of discounts there for youngsters. And those are all things that got taken on board. But we need to keep on trying to find ways of getting national organisations, commercial bodies involved in perhaps embracing these schemes and taking a look at them as well. And very close to my heart again is the difference between the urban and rural types of transport. It's all very well actually saying that the rural areas are the ones that are suffering the most because of the wide distances often between both the education establishments and the places that the people are coming from. But actually, in urban areas, there are similar problems too. The complications of networks and indeed the timings, as I said earlier on, sometimes get in the way of trying to plan networks there too. So it's something that we think there are often ties between where that provision exists and what actually happens in the community. With the Yellow School Bus Commission, our view was that educational qualifications out there are often linked up to the ability of young people to actually get to the course that they want to take, to be encouraged to get involved in education activities. And if that's not there, or it's very complex or even expensive, then it begins to have a major tie into that. There are some areas of good practice that we're beginning to look at. We're going down in a couple of weeks' time to take a look at Stagecoach East Kent, who've got an excellent induction programme that they've embraced, where Kent introduced their Freedom Card, and that has developed a lot of traffic there. So it can be done. Commercial operations can benefit from this, and Stagecoach have a team which has been doing very well down there along similar lines, I think, probably to our friends from Manchester we heard about earlier on. I think we're going to hear from Southend later on today, where they took the bull by the horns and embrace the issues of the time bands and the types of people that could use the discounts and the age groups in particular. I won't steal their thunder, they'll tell you about that later on. And, for example, places like Bournemouth, where there's a lot of commercial activity. It's I won't go as far as to say it's bus war zone, but certainly it's territory in which commercial operators are challenging one another for new initiatives. And they've realised that young people are a very important part of what goes on there, and they need to tell them about it. And when we did studies, I was doing studies around the country of web-based information, there's so few that actually include details of what the youth discounts are. If you go and look at any website for both local authority and commercial operators, you'll find quite often lots of information about the adult type tickets that are available, but very little to explain to you what the student discount or the child discount is. But Bournemouth is one that actually does a very good job on that, and all the operators there have embraced that. Is it all possible in a cost-cutting world? Can we actually do all these things? Well, I would say to you that actually a lot of these things don't cost a lot of money at all. the work that we're doing, actually, because we've got quite a few partners who are very keen to embrace this, we've got chunks of funds that have come from various bits of the groupings here that are involved in getting in the detail on the projects there. But as far as you guys and girls are concerned, actually, at the end of the day, it's often little more than putting additional information that wasn't there before onto web-based sites or into your publicity material that perhaps forgets children. Obviously, when we come to looking at networks and considering how to involve operators, how to get better, efficient prices from them for the contracts inevitably you're looking for at the moment, then you're going to have to look a lot harder at that. But that's where I would encourage you to consider the community transport organisations. And, of course, it's not just bus and coach. I'm the representative for the bus and coach world, but there are other forms of transport as well. We've mentioned cycling and walking. But, of course, the railways also need to be considered. There are occasions when local community railways, for example, can provide some sort of provision. Again, I get involved in Devon with a line there where there are, in fact, some stations on the line that have no bus provision at all at the moment, and that line can provide a useful role with both college and school movements. So I'd certainly encourage you to look at all forms of transport in your area and see where they can go. Where do yellow school buses fit in? Well, I guess I have to say a word about this, having been on the commission. The issue there, of course, is money. At the end of the day, a lot of what we wanted unfortunately couldn't be provided. But there are parts of that model. You know, yellow is, as I keep saying, is only one very small part of what the project was about. Yellow school buses also have other issues as well. It's things like, obviously, CCTV on board, the appropriate seating and safety issues, but also things like risk assessments. The operators suddenly being brought into the world of considering risk assessments, where they start getting involved in talking realistically to you guys about routings, how things can be done better, how they can be improved. And in Wales, for example, at the moment, a lot of work is going on at the minute. We're in the process of a consultation with the Welsh Assembly Government over a learner safety measure there, which is looking to try and commonalise approaches across the whole of the unitary authorities there. And that's going to be quite interesting as well, because that will have implications for the rest of the UK if it goes through. Obviously, politically, it's an issue with their elections later on this year. And it may be that Stuart Lynn will talk to you a bit about that with his involvement, I know, in Wales later on today. So the yellow school bus model, or some elements of it, I think could well be quite important. Really important that we engage with young people, though. I wanted to emphasise that again as I get to the end of this piece, because if you don't talk to them and you don't understand what they need and what their understanding issues are, then you won't succeed in getting them on the services. And at the end of the day, what we desperately need is for them to go on using those services and not go out and buy themselves cars and motorbikes and other forms of transport later on. We want them to use what I hope are going to be half-decent vehicles. We're trying in this industry to invest in decent vehicles, you know, whether it's leather seats like that one or whether it's other facilities like CCTV or a bit of music on the vehicle for them, as we have with some of the yellow school buses, I don't know. But there are ways that the industry can innovate as well if we can persuade them to stay on and use the buses in greater numbers. And just a final piece there to remind you that it's not just the daytime provision that we're looking at. We are looking to encourage them to use services at all times of the day. I got involved in a project recently where some young people were engaged on looking at transport in the West Midlands. And to my astonishment, they made as a big issue a lot of their social activities in the evening that they felt they were heavily curtailed because there was no transport provision. And we actually, I was stunned that they didn't realise that the level of nighttime provision in the West Midlands is actually quite good, and they didn't understand the night bus networks, for example. And, you know, it was very easy for us to poo-poo that and think they hadn't looked very far. But when you actually looked at the information available and tried to see how they were drilling down to that and seeing it, understanding the difference between an integrated transport authority and the operator, for example, you began to realise why perhaps we hadn't gone out there and told them all we needed to know. Where do we go next? Well, goodness only knows. I hope you're going to tell me that. Perhaps our friends up in Leeds will want to tell us that they know where to go next. They've already done this and they could do with a bit more money to expand the MyBus project. That's perhaps one way of doing it. But in other ways, I think we need to look at certainly finding ways of perhaps our industry, the O-licensed industry, the bus and coach sector that I represent, looking at ways of embracing the community idea in some other ways, dare I say it. There's one person in this room here today who said to me once, if we can't beat them, why don't we join them? Well, perhaps that's the way we're going to have to go. We're going to have to look at that very carefully. So I hope you're going to come up to some ideas for us as well today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.
John, thank you very much. Once again, you've packed an awful lot into a very short period of time, but we have run out of time. But I will take one question, one quick question, as long as it's not, what is a telephone box? Gentleman at the back, if you could stand up and tell us who you are, please.
I am standing up. Good morning. Mike Harrison, I'm an elected member for Kent Kent Council and I chair our regulation services, and I'd like to join you on your visit with Stagecoach, if I can.
But welcome.
I would just like to offer a word of wisdom. Be very careful for what you wish for. Our Freedom Pass, of which we are very, very proud of, is costing us something like £10 to £12 million per year. So do be careful of what you actually go out there and seek before you look at what's on the horizon. We've just had to put up the admin charge of that as of our next full council meeting to £100 a year. Doesn't sound a lot, but it's an actual saving, so they tell me, of £450 per person per year and is being used. But more a statement rather than a question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Wise words.